Weekend Breakfast with Sarah Jane King.
Saturday and Sunday, 6 to 10 a.m.
A very good morning, Katie McDonald. How are you this morning?
I'm not too bad. I'm very, very cold. And a good morning to you, Sarah Jane King.
Are you freezing? What's the temperature in Sydney?
Oh, I think it's... I don't even think it's that cold. I think it's about 14 degrees.
But oh, come on.
That for me is subarctic.
Subarctic. As my mother would say, pop another jumper on. Pop another jumper on and you'll be grand.
I wish you could see what I've got on my feet. I just found the warmest, thickest, ugliest socks out there. Delicious.
What I'd like to do is to start doing this segment via Zoom. That would be marvellous. Oh. And then we could actually clap eyes on you and see. Actually, I wouldn't like that at all. I would absolutely hate that because the beauty.
You know what?
Of what I was going to say, the beauty of being in radio as opposed to abandoning my forays into television is that I can pretty much rock up in my pyjamas and have been known to at times. And nobody, apart from sort of, you know, the odd security guard and delightful person who is found wandering the halls of Cape Talk HQ at stupid o'clock in the morning, nobody knows that that SJ hasn't really bothered to get dressed.
Well, I will say that I am wearing, and I don't always do it, but I'm wearing it's probably about a 10-year-old Cape Talk sweatshirt.
Oh, in homage. That's a lovely, lovely fashion homage to Cape Talk. All right, madam, to the matter at hand, we must stop this waffling. Okay, let's crack on. And of course, Katie joins us at this time every week to just give us a rundown of some of the stories that have been making news in her neck of the woods. And we're going to start with asylum seeker children in Australia and a big sort of spotlight being shone on the treatment of those young people. Tell us a little bit more.
Well, what's provoked this discussion, and it's been an ongoing discussion, is the story of this Sri Lankan family. It's just too sad. It's heartbreaking that have basically been trying to get asylum seeker status, some kind of refugee status since 2012. When I say 2012, that was when the father first arrived in Australia by boat. And then the mother in 2013, they married, they had two children, and both daughters were born here in Australia. Now, what happened was they were relocated to a town in Queensland called Billowheeler, where they were accepted, part of the community, and living as they tried to apply or successfully apply for refugee status. Now, what happened was that was denied by the government, or not the government, well, the courts, for various reasons. It's quite a complex legal procedure. And then in 2018, the family with these tiny little girls were sent to a Melbourne detention centre, then off to Sri Lanka. An urgent interdict caused the plane to turn around in midair, but they did not bring them back to Australia. In 2019, this family ended up on Christmas Island. And they are the only family there in detention and have been since 2019. Now, the youngest daughter has just been medevaced out of there to Perth. She has septicemia or sepsis caused by untreated pneumonia.
Sure.
She's just turned four. It's absolutely tragic. And it's a story, look, it's divided Australians. I think more people have come around to realise that not just for this family, but the long-lasting effects of having children, forget about how it affects the adults, because it affects them as well terribly, but in a situation where they're in detention with adults who are depressed, who are stressed, the ongoing, the long-term health concerns, both physically and mentally, are huge, and emotionally. And this family has sort of been the poster or family for what's considered to be by many a harsh policy by the Australian government. Because the thing is, Sarah Jane, that if you arrive here by boat, which has those boat numbers have drastically dropped, you're just denied entry. And the numbers have dropped but there are still 7 people in Papua New Guinea, 108 in Nauru, and this family on Christmas Island in detention. Can't imagine how they're living. So it's reignited talk. It's been quite interesting listening to experts as to, these not surprising effects on children who are held in such conditions. But what it's also done, Sarah Jane, it's reignited a push to bring this family back to Australia. And the community that they were living in, Bilawila, they want them back. So I'm just hoping that something positive can come out of this tragic situation.
It's devastating, isn't it? And whenever we hear stories about this kind of situation, whether it be immigrants or asylum seekers, I'm reminded of the situation in the US of, obviously different, but children being separated from their parents and guardians, but essentially the children of immigrants, of asylum seekers, and the effect that this has on them. It's devastating. There's some terribly, terribly, I would actually say, distressing pictures on The Guardian of this family, this little girl in hospital. Terribly, terribly sad. I do hope that that gets resolved and they're able to repatriated probably isn't even the right word, but certainly to
find but settled in Australia and in a community, that loves them and wants them there. And the government can stop this rhetoric of, it's going to provide a bad example and we need to deter, people. But this is just, personally, I think it's gone too far. But that is just my personal opinion.
Give us the latest on Aung San Suu Kyi, the deposed leader, and in respect of what's going on in Myanmar. She's now facing even more serious charges.
She is indeed. And this is... well, obviously has been in the spotlight, but her trial actually begins next week. It begins on June the 14th. And they've now charged her or accused her of accepting cash and gold in bribes. So that adds another possible 15 years. Well, the sentence for that is 15 years in jail if found guilty. So that's on top of the other charges that she's facing. I'm just sitting here sort of doing the eye-rolling thing, which, obviously we're not on Zoom, you can't see. But her legal team, her lawyers, have only been allowed to meet with her twice since she was put under house arrest on the 1st of February. And they're having to deal with this case, which it'll be interesting to see just how free, fair and, unbiased it is. But so she basically faces these charges of corruption. So now that's the maximum jail term of 15 years. There was the previous charge of violating the Official Secrets Act, violating import-export laws. I mean, that was, importing walkie-talkies, telecommunications law, 2 charges of violating a natural disaster law and inciting public arrest. So that goes to trial, as I said, on June the 14th. And it will be interesting to see just how much of a defence they're allowed to mount, or just how much of a case they're allowed to put forward, and what the outcome will be of that case. I can imagine the world will be watching. I should hope the world will be watching.
So this now adds to the charges that she's currently facing, and one of them that she broke the Official Secrets Act. And that that charge in and of itself carries a term of up to 14 years in jail. Yeah, this is an exactly. Interesting story to watch. All right, let's talk about this, a bit of a coup for the Australian police and the FBI, who've teamed up to crack down on organised crime.
It is a huge coup. It's a massive coup. And I do have to say that it's been all over the news. And it's interesting, Sarah Jane. So it was a combined operation. Well, when I say combined, not just the FBI and the Australian police, but there are many other countries that were involved, but mainly the FBI and the Australian police. And it was called Operation Ironside. And what it essentially was that the FBI had this criminal that they did a deal with, create this app called Anon, and it allowed them to listen into the calls of criminals. Now, there are many ways that criminals, you know, communicate globally. They basically, it was quite interesting, they sort of, they didn't enlist. Somehow, I'm not too sure how it actually played out in the beginning, but there was this Aussie criminal, hasn't lived in Australia since 2010, Hakan Ayak, and he got hold of this app, and he was one of the first people to basically say to his mates, this is a great secure platform to communicate, and they adopted it. And what they had was the FBI and the Australian Federal Police listening in on all of their phone calls. It's led to the arrest so far, because more will be happening, of over 800 people globally. Over 200 people in Australia have been arrested on 526 charges. That's right across Australia. Since 2018, under this operation, 3.7 tons of drugs have been found in Australia, 104 weapons, $45 million in cash so far has been uncovered. And they've also intercepted other operations, plots to kill and such things. But it's a huge, huge operation. They're rightly so patting themselves on the back. It's going to lead to many more arrests domestically, well, here and offshore. And according to the FBI, they say it's basically rocked the criminal world globally.
It's been called the sting of the century, which is...
Exactly.
That's extraordinary. The sting of the century. All right, Operation Ironside. And then finally, a street in Melbourne has been named the coolest in the world. Is it Ramsay Street?
How do you know?
Okay, what do you mean? I'll tell you how I know Ramsay Street. Now, for people who may not be au fait, so Ramsay Street is the street which features in a very, very, very long-running soapy in Australia called Neighbours, which found its way to the UK, I think, in about 1984. And as a child, that was my sort of afternoon TV viewing. I was allowed half an hour of TV viewing, and that's what I selected. Hence, there we are. Hence why I said Ramsay Street.
Okay, it's not Ramsay Street.
It's not Ramsay Street. Devastating. Where is it?
Well, it's actually Smith Street. Now, I'm not too with Melbourne. Smith Street.
All right.
It's Collingwood, Smith Street. And I had been to Melbourne and I was there a couple of years ago, and I do have to say it is a very, very cool place. But it's one of those things. It was Time Out, you know, that entertainment magazine. Yeah. And they, surveyed, thousands of people around the world, and they came up with this list of 30 of the world's coolest streets. And it's always nice to be able to say, you know, gosh, we've got the coolest street. So Melbourne holds that honour at the moment.
Based on what, Katie? It's called the coolest because?
It's trendy, it's popular, it's full of, they say, because it's full of restaurants, it's full of bars, it's got a good vibe. Look, it's interesting because Cork Bay made Top 30. I mean, Main Road Cork Bay.
Yeah, Cork Bay was named one of the coolest suburbs in the world a couple of years back.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, Sydney, we came in at 19 with King Street, which, interestingly enough, when I was at uni, was the main drag near the university. And it was pretty hipster then, but now it's very, very cool and vibey.
Once we've all got our jabs, we need to get on a plane and go to Smith Street in Melbourne. Okay, done.
You need to go to Smith Street, exactly.
Done. Yeah, all right, I'll meet you there for absolutely. A coffee. Katie, we're going to have to leave it there. Cool. Thanks very much indeed. We'll chat to you next week. Katie McDonald is our Sydney-based correspondent. She'll be back with us next week for more news from Sydney, surrounds, and the general antipodes in general.